Blog Talk Radio.
We welcome you inside on this Monday, rainy Monday, 70 degrees under cloudy skies. We will be joined, I believe, and this is a kind of fly on the wall, whatever that term is for kind of throwing it together as we go sort of deal. Show, I will be joined momentarily. By Sean Davison, I believe, to talk some FedEx Cup, some Ryder Cup, captain's picks, and maybe some college football if we have time for it at the end of the interview. This is the Tour Championship presented by Coca-Cola and Southern Company this week. The final week of the PGA Tour 2015-2016 season. PGA Tour will take 2 weeks off and come back October 10th through 13th when a guy by the name of Woods, comma Tiger, comes back and gets welcomed back into our collective memories on a consistent basis. So that comes up soon, in 3 weeks, and then we have the Ryder Cup next week, which you will see on Golf Channel and NBC. Obviously, we had week two of the National Football League yesterday, a very ugly but productive win for the Giants in their campaign against the Saints. We have other things happening in various places around the league. We have a Monday Night Football game tonight between the Eagles and the Bears, a game that I don't know, besides Eagle fans who are passionate about their team. I don't know what the allure of this game is. The Bears are not going to be a very good team, in my opinion. We'll see over time, but I don't think this seems ready to progress to the next level. And Thursday Night Football has the Jacoby Brissett Patriots, or Brissett Patriots, up against the Houston Texans, who I think have to be very excited that they will be the team ready to go in that game and in a position to really get an unexpected win. Coming out of week three, which could prove big, obviously, for them in the AFC South, especially with the Colts as banged up as they are. That team right now, the Indianapolis Colts, needs a bye immediately. It's not going to happen. They're going to be one of the teams going to London in a couple weeks, but they are still banged up in that secondary. And the fact that Trevor Siemian and that offense, just not a really electric, crazy offense, has a chance to obviously do a lot of interesting things and continue to progress and get these first two wins, even though their opponents have not been very decent. We're going to take a 30-second timeout and come back. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. We'll be back. Talk golf right after this.
Sometimes tough isn't enough.
Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Back here on Teeing It Up. We await our friend Sean Davidson to call in and talk some golf, amongst other things. We are in that stretch where a lot of interesting things can happen. In the FedEx Cup, if you go to PGATour.com, and I assume it's up by now, I haven't checked, but I assume by now, you have a scenarios page, and you can find all sorts of goodies involving, this is not a full article, but I'm sure somewhere on here is the insight into all the available scenarios. As to the FedEx Cup, we got five guys: Patrick Reed, Rory, because of his win. The app is team's colors. Ah, yes, the FedEx Cup standings. Dustin, Patrick Reed, Adam Scott, Jason Day, Paul Casey are the guys who control their own destiny. And what's interesting about this, and some of you probably know this if you follow golf closely, is that we've got an interesting scenario here where Rory McIlroy won a playoff event, but because Paul Casey was so good, Rory does not control his own destiny, and Paul Casey does. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Luke's going to join us temporarily here while we wait for Sean Davidson, and I thought about having you on because I'm watching the Emmys last night, and I'm scrolling through Twitter, and I see, Adrian Peterson, and you must have just lost it.
It's the same thing with the Vikings, always one thing after another, but Minnesota's still able to pull out the victory even without AP for the end of last night's game, and getting word today that it's a torn meniscus. But, you know, that sounds bad on the surface, but it's an injury that Chris Johnson actually played the entire 2013 season with, didn't miss a game and rushed for over 1,000 yards, so they still haven't ruled Peterson out for this Sunday yet.
You know, I'm not sure why I said 41 points. Evidently, I am vastly undervaluing and under-respecting the Vikings defense. What's interesting about this, and actually we will talk about this on Sunday. Luke, thanks. I appreciate it.
No problem. You got it.
Yep. Now we welcome Sean Davidson. Hello, sir.
How's it going, Jeremy?
I'm good. All right, so we got Tour Championship Week, and we got five guys: Dustin, Patrick, Jason, Paul Casey, and I forgot somebody who I just mentioned here, Adam Scott, who controlled their own destiny going into this week, coming off the week off. And for me, Sean, this just feels like this is going to be Paul Casey's, you know, crowning achievement. He's been building towards this, was in contention all weekend in Boston, and it just seems like This is the perfect script and the first perfect culmination point for Paul Casey to finally get back in the winner's circle.
Well, I absolutely actually agree with you on that. Paul Casey is a guy that, I mean, battling all he's battled off the golf course and injury-wise, there's a lot of people that root for him, myself included. He's a really likable guy. He's got a real great work ethic. He's got everything in order now. And we're seeing him make, I guess you could say, his comeback in many ways on the PGA Tour and globally in golf in general. And for me, sort of like what you said, it sort of almost feels like this could be his crowning achievement. Not much different, I guess you could say, than when Henrik Stenson won the FedEx Cup. We've seen guys win the FedEx Cup that haven't won majors, and in the case of Henrik Stenson, have gone on to win majors. So it could be entirely possible that amongst the likes of Adam Scott and Jason Day and Dustin Johnson, that the guy in the top five who consistently reels off these high finishes but usually gets beat by somebody finds his way to the top of the leaderboard in a limited field event and wins it and wins the $10 million bonus.
And, you know, think about Paul Casey for a second. He puts family first, doesn't keep up his membership for the European Tour. That disqualifies him from the Ryder Cup. Somebody who's had a great Ryder Cup record makes it his goal to make the English team for the Olympics, fails to. So, you know, first he can't play in his big event. Then his next goal, he doesn't make it. And now I guess $10 million could be the next best thing to cap off Paul Casey's season.
It gives him 10 million reasons to get over it. It absolutely does. Gives him a shiny trophy to look at too. But I mean,
yeah, seriously.
In his career, he's won once on the PGA Tour, if I'm not mistaken, at Houston in 09. Went up to number three in the world, had all kinds of injury issues that kept him from, in many cases, playing to his potential, went through a divorce, found love again, got remarried, has a child, lives in the United States, plays in the United States, and one of the most likable guys you'll see out there, right up there with the likes of Zach Johnson, just a true, genuine, good guy that a lot of people like, who has a great work ethic, who's been plugging away at it, trying to revitalize his career, and if he were to win this tournament, you know, I mean, he's already moved himself up into the world rankings where, you know, he's not sweating out whether or not he's getting into Augusta. But this, at least, you know, in that regard, takes him up that extra echelon where he doesn't have to worry about a whole lot of things. And if he does want to pick up European Tour membership and try to play on a Ryder Cup team, he's in really great standing for 2018. I mean, this is a guy that really is a step away from getting back to where we thought he would be in 2010. And it'd be great to see him get there.
And he's also coached by Peter Kostas. You know, Dan Hicks said this in Boston. He's got 13 European Tour victories. Got only the one victory here in Houston, but people forget how prolific he's been on the European Tour. You know, it's interesting. This Player of the Year race is kind of wide open. I think most people, you know, have seen that. Danny Willett has no chance because of his poor performance outside of Augusta, which leaves us with Dustin Johnson and then Jason Day. And I think most people would consider those two guys and maybe Henrik Stenson if he were to win this week, but I don't even think he's in the Tour Championship field. So I think it's basically a Dustin Johnson, Jason Day thing for Player of the Year. And Jason's now got the bad back, and his agent says he's hopeful for this week. It's one of those deals where I would think this is Dustin Johnson's Player of the Year trophy to lose.
No, I absolutely agree. And you look at, I guess, the unspoken criteria to be named the Player of the Year. Usually you got to win a major. You can check that box off. And you want some high-quality wins outside of that. Well, he's won a major. He's won a WGC event. He's won a playoff event. He's made the Ryder Cup team. I mean, he's done everything. He played in the Olympics. He could have played in the Olympics, sorry.
Right.
You know, anything you could have imagined him being able to do, he's done. or, you know, could have done and chose not to. So, I mean, without a doubt, I would say hands down, unless Jason Day battles a bad back and picks up another PGA Tour win this year and happens to take home a FedEx Cup trophy with it, I would still even say you could give the nod to Dustin Johnson because of that major championship.
Talking to Sean Davidson about various things in golf, who of the guys, sorry, that don't control their own destiny, and I'm looking mainly at the guys who are 6th and 7th in the FedEx Cup standings right now, which is Mr. Spieth and Mr. McIlroy, but who outside of that top 5 do you think has a chance this week? For me, for some reason, and especially since he's going to come in playing, since he's at Hazeltine right now, in Jordan Spieth, I just think that for some reason, I think he's got the best shot to try to pull this off than anybody else. And then the second guy for me that's piqued my interest, this side of Phil Mickelson, because I don't think anybody can figure out what Phil Mickelson will do. But this side of it, as somebody who would win this week and then maybe win the FedEx Cup if a whole bunch of things went right, is Kevin Na. He's been knocking on the door for a couple weeks now and just can't fully pull through it.
Well, I think actually, Kevin Na is another one of those guys that's been knocking on the door for quite a while. But for me, actually, as I'm actually taking a look at the FedEx Cup standings right now, the guy that I look at, and there's two of them outside of McIlroy and Spieth that are, you know, sitting right there at 6 and 7, that I look at and I raise an eyebrow when I think of, are Russell Knox and Emiliano Grillo. 8 and 9, so they're well within that striking range. If you're Kevin Na, well down the list, you've got to get quite a bit of help in addition to winning. You're looking at the guys at 8 and 9, where the scenarios are far fewer that have to happen if they were to win. And Russell Knox is one of those guys that he doesn't do a whole lot wrong. It's whether or not he can put enough great holes together. He's a pretty even-keel kind of golfer, and we've seen Emiliano Grillo. It's rather, I mean, for him, it's can he putt well over 72 days, so 72 holes, 4 days. God, 72 days would be just awful. But anyway, if Grillo could putt well for a tournament, it's 30 men in that field. And if he could putt lights out or find some time, spend some time up on top of that leaderboard, and even if he doesn't putt great on Sunday, do just enough, that's a guy that could perhaps sneak in there, win the whole thing. Russell Knox sitting there at 8th. Again, very solid. If something catches fire and he finds his tour championship trophy and the right things fall the way they could, he could very easily win a FedEx Cup title. We've seen the likes of Tiger and Vijay, when they were on top of the world, win this thing. We've seen guys come out of nowhere like Bill Haas and Brandt Snedeker. And just looking at those two guys outside of the top 5 and the marquee names of McIlroy, Spieth, and Mickelson, in addition to your Na mention, you could take a look at Grillo and Knox and say, they could possibly do it, too.
Talking with Sean Davidson here. By the way, a 72-day tournament would be the ultimate torturous Q school.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, seriously.
Anybody who can play those 72 days in a row gets a card.
Yeah, seriously. That would be... That's like the Ironman triathlon in Hawaii for golf. I mean, that would just be the extreme of the extreme. You should get a lifetime tour membership if you can survive that. All right. Who is your fourth Ryder Cup pick, captain's pick, sir?
Well, you know, I have to take a look at some of the guys who are just on the outside looking in. You've got, and to me, it comes down to two guys. Bubba Watson. Not even two guys. Bubba Watson, Daniel Berger are the two that stand out to me first and foremost. Guys who have won this year, guys who have showed a lot of potential this year. Then you've got the interesting guys, the Gary Woodlands who have been on leaderboards but haven't won. The Roberto Castros, who I believe didn't even start the year with any kind of tour status, but played his way into the tour championship. The Kevin Nas, as you so mentioned. William McGirt breaking through. And I think with those guys, the way it just boils down to is unless it's Bubba Watson, who, I mean, he's just barely in the field. If Bubba Watson finishes, I'd say, in the top 5 or top 10, you can mark down Bubba Watson as being that final captain's pick. But if Bubba Watson finishes 24th and, say, Daniel Berger finishes second, you might just see Daniel Berger slide in there and make the team. Same thing goes for a Gary Woodland. So I think it really could – I don't want to say it's Bubba's spot to lose, but with his popularity – and granted, I don't believe he has the best Ryder Cup record, but with it being in America and with his popularity with the fans here – and with the things he can do on a golf course, if he's playing well and he plays well at the Tour Championship, it's Bubba. If it's any other American that's anywhere near where Bubba is on that Ryder Cup points list and just didn't quite get a captain's pick or qualify yet, such as a Daniel Berger, and he finishes second and Bubba's down the leaderboard, I say it's his.
A couple interesting notes for the folks out there. If Bubba gets picked, then the people 9 through 12 will have gotten picked off the points list. And keep in mind, if Justin Thomas and his fall win had counted, he would have made the team on points. Speaking of fan love and the people's reaction to Bubba, there's this theory out there that he's not well-liked in the locker room and that the guys on the task force want somebody else who they believe may be able to fit better in that team room. Then Bubba Davis Love has knocked that down, saying that whole theory is completely false. What's your take on this theory?
Well, I'm going to be careful with my take on this theory. And from what I've gathered from going out to different tour events and covering a few different tour events, is that with Bubba, I don't want to say he's a divisive guy in the locker room. I don't have locker room access.
Right.
But what I've seen with him is he's very hot and cold. If he's having a good day on the golf course or if he's just having a good day in general, he's very gregarious, very open, very laughable, and you want to be around him. If he's not playing well, if something didn't go right that day, or if anything like that happens, he becomes very abrasive and you don't necessarily want to be too close around him. That kind of guy who's kind of a crapshoot as to what you are going to get, you might not want in your locker room. But at the same time, he's Bubba Watson. And I feel like with the passion that Bubba plays the game with, that's something that you do want in your locker room at a Ryder Cup, in a Ryder Cup or President's Cup event. So it's one of those things. Do you want a guy who can tend to get abrasive when things don't go right, but passion in the locker room at an event where you really need it? Or do you want to go with somebody who's more even keel but might not bring that same level of passion to the locker room or to the first tee? It's a tricky call, and I don't believe that alone is something that Davis Love and the task force would be considering and saying, you know, we want somebody more likable, case closed.
You know, for me, I'm torn on this because I love Bubba. I love the enthusiasm he has for this event. Mike Tirico told a great story, which you can see on my Twitter feed, which he told to the NBC Fighting Irish reporter about how he sat in front of Bubba at one of Michael Phelps' races down there, and just how crazy he went as Bubba turned for home in the last 50, and that this is somebody who jumps to play for his country. I'm torn about that versus new blood, fresh blood, and what this should be, and is somebody like Justin Thomas, who has no scar tissue, the right guy? It'll be fascinating to see what Davis does at halftime on Sunday Night Football coming up this Sunday on NBC. All right. I have promised you college football talk, and we keep failing to get to it, so here's some time to talk about it. Of the team that you have seen either in person or on TV so far this year, through 3 weeks, who's the most impressive?
Well, it's hard for me to argue against Alabama's opening weekend blowout of USC. Now, there's going to be people who say, well, it's USC, and I understand. USC is very much a work in progress out of the Pac-12, and I think people were being a little too optimistic when they gave them the ranking that they gave them to start the year. I believe they were ranked 20th. The team that I've seen, and I'm still licking my wounds from it, that really has impressed me is Louisville. Lamar Jackson is a f***ing. I mean, this kid, I have never seen somebody pull off the throws he's pulled off or as quick as he's been. I mean, there were times that it looked like he was bottled up to spin out of a tackle, and the next thing you know, he's dancing in the end zone. I mean, this kid is a freak. And I think that Louisville all the way around is a solid team, and I'm looking forward to seeing if they do perhaps run the table. They've got a big game. They've got a big game at Clemson in a couple of weekends. They play Marshall this weekend. If they get through that, I think the schedule for Louisville is pretty clear all the way until the next to last week of the season, where they actually have to go to Houston and play Houston, who is another team that impressed me by beating Oklahoma the way they did. Another team going up north to the Big Ten that I wasn't sure what to expect from was Ohio State. Sure, they had JT Barrett, but they lost some of the players that made them as good as they were over the past few years. But the way they dismantled Oklahoma as well, at Oklahoma, which isn't an easy place to play, Florida State, the team I cover, went up to Oklahoma about 5-6 years ago, lost by 30. Still, the way they went in there and demolished Oklahoma at home was impressive as well. Michigan looks good, although Michigan hasn't quite played the same caliber of opponents. And, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. The Big Ten looks really good. Alabama looks really good. Louisville looks really good. And with Clemson, talking about the Louisville-Clemson matchup, you just would have to sit there and wonder if the real Clemson will stand up. They put up 59 points this last weekend against South Carolina State, so they beat the undercard the way you would expect them to. But at the same time, they look a little bit like 2014 FSU when they play quality opponents, barely skating by, and also when they're not playing the best quality opponents, also kind of sweating it out a little bit too much like we saw them sweat it out with Troy. So some interesting teams. Alabama looks good, breaking news. And out of the ACC, surprisingly, it looks like Louisville might be waving the banner.
You know, I think you were at that game on Saturday in person, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. What was really interesting about watching that game on TV is that you hear the hype, you hear the hype, you hear the hype, and then you see Lamar Jackson actually go crazy. What was it like to be there in person? Because I've always found that watching these athletes in person, you pick up, you know, tiny little things about them. So what did you pick up in person watching Lamar Jackson?
Lamar Jackson, I mean, you hear that he's elusive. You hear that he's fast. You hear that he can throw the ball absurd distances. And for me, I think the thing that impressed me the most was this was the first time that ever since he's been hyped, which is, you know, from the beginning of the year, Lamar Jackson really had the spotlight on him. And he was really playing a team that, coming into the year, Florida State's defensive line was considered to be one of the best in the country. So for me, to see Lamar Jackson handle what little pressure that he got from FSU's defense because his O-line was so good as well, and to really respond in the moment. There was a part of that game where in the second quarter, FSU closed the lead to 4, and it looked like they had took the momentum back. Breaking news, FSU falls behind and reels another team in. But in response to that, on I believe a 3rd and 5 or a 3rd and 6, he throws a dart of a pass across the center of the field, through 3 defenders, finds a man for about a 37, 38-yard pickup for a first down, then Louisville goes back to the ground and pound, and they score. But for him to usher that sort of response and to have that sort of precision and to be as quick as he is, I mean, I can't tell you how many tackles I saw him break. I mean, not just, you know, poor tackling, but break tackles. He has every single tool, and he really can be the next special college football player, and really can absolutely be the next Heisman Trophy winner.
Sean Davidson, thanks as always for coming on Teeing It Up. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeremy. Pleasure as always.
Yep, that's all for Teeing It Up today. We're on archive anytime on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you Sunday for the Sunday Sprint. Enjoy the Tour Championship and everything else happening in the world of sports. Have a great night, everybody.